Welcome to Venturi's Voice. I'm Andy Davis. Venturi's Voice brings together thought leaders from a variety of industries who are taking the most innovative approaches to leadership and staffing. Imagine having a mix of experienced mentors sharing their secrets on leadership, recruiting, onboarding, engagement, and motivating, as well as stories on life lessons they've learned along the way. And it's free. If you're the head of a major corporation leading a team of hundreds or about to take on your first leadership role, this podcast is for you. This show is about you, and we're here to help you become the best leader you can be. Stay up to date with the latest shows by subscribing on iTunes and SoundCloud, as well as signing up to the newsletter at venturi-group.com, where you can find the latest IT jobs, talent, and blogs on all things leadership, staffing, and development. I'd love to hear from you, so drop me a line anytime via email at andy.davis@venturi-group.com. Any feedback or requests are always welcome. Enjoy the show. Today's guest is John Donoghue, Director of Development at Smart Communications.
Thanks again for joining us. You know, I'm definitely looking forward to hearing kind of your story. So without sort of further ado, you know, I'd like to just get a bit of a sense of your background, how you, first got interested in technology and development.
Well, I guess it started back in school days, picking up a bit of computers, mostly because I really wanted to do gaming, but then discovering that actually the programming side was kind of interesting. Went to university, did that. Worked as a programmer for, 10 years or so before starting to edge towards the management side of things. And then ended up working as a team master, team lead, scrum master, product owner, offshore manager, before eventually winding up where I am now as director of development.
So you talked about the gaming aspect. That's quite like a common thing for why people get interested. Was it more about the way that things worked that kind of, you know, inspired you to continuously progress your skill set with that regard?
I think I just got used to spending time with computers because I wanted to play games. And back when I was younger, you wanted to get your Spectrum 48K was my first computer. You want to make that play a game, you got to do a certain amount of programming. It's not just put a disk in. So just start to get used to being comfortable with computers, and then starting to learn what else they can do, the possibilities of programming them, finding out that this is kind of interesting, and then you find out that it's a decent career as well. I think I just kind of fell into it. I don't think I had a grand master plan. I just kind of followed my interest and ended up getting a pretty decent career out of it.
When you started, what sort of year was it then?
I graduated year 2000, although I'd done a placement year in industry the year before. So I was working in an industry in 99 when people were fixing Y2K issues, although sadly as an intern I didn't get a big payout for it, but I was doing some of the work to help out with that. First proper job, late 2000.
I mean, technology must have been so much different back then. And obviously, I think early 2000s, 99, sort of, it served a different purpose, isn't it, technology? Obviously, as we know it now, it's kind of, like you said, it's a product, isn't it, very much so. It was more of kind of a service and kind of something like an operating function, as opposed to kind of the innovative and more creative things that we can do with it now. Do you think that that's accurate, I suppose, to start? And, how have you kind of seen things evolve over the last sort of 10 years or so?
I've always been involved in sort of the enterprise side of things. So the placement year I did was with Debenhams, their in-house development team. But we were a small team doing particular projects and working closely with stakeholders to building a software system that's going to be used by, maybe as few as a dozen people. I think there's less of that these days. I'm sure it's going on places still, but we're a lot more building. You want to get that economy of scale. You're building a system that's going to be used by lots of people. Businesses buy in things to work, and obviously, cost an awful lot less than getting an entire team of developers to build something just for you. But I think I've always been more on the enterprise side. Obviously, there's things going on out there with a lot more consumer focused. Systems than there were back then. I think when I was doing that, when I first started, com- consumer focused stuff was well, probably games is about it really. A few other little bits and pieces of productivity software, but this idea that everybody's got loads of apps that they engage with all the time, obviously that's come along in the last, I don't know, few years, last 10 years maybe we started to do that. So yeah, I think I would agree that the technology landscape has changed, but from my perspective, building enterprise systems to support business use cases, that's not changed so much. Obviously, the technologies have changed and how we deploy it and working practices with things like Agile have changed. But the problems we're trying to solve are broadly similar, I think.
Right. Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? And what is it for you as far as on the development side? Is it still, it sounds to me like it's still about the actual, just hands-on, fixing problems, creating things on a more technical level, as opposed to the outcomes. But is that a motivating factor anyway, to know that what you're working on and the value of those outcomes now?
My role these days is more I focus on building the team and the process and the environment, and then my team do the actual building of the product that we sell. So my focus has very much changed in that respect. But I think as an organization, we're trying to deliver value for our users. And I think maybe as a young developer, you don't realize you need to focus on that quite so much. But at the end of the day, that's we all like to get paid. So you need to develop something which, that has value to somebody. And the idea that we can all just work on whatever we fancy and get paid for it anyway, it doesn't quite work like that. If you want to do open source stuff, or your own pet hobby projects, that's great. And a lot of my guys do like to do little bits and pieces of their own stuff. But, at the end of the day, you're going to pull down a salary. You need to do something which is of value to some business somewhere.
Yeah. And I think that from people I've spoke to, the new generation of developers now, seem to have, and again, correct me if I'm wrong, a bit more of a business acumen going into things than maybe the developers, who came through in your time. Has that been the case for you?
I think it depends on a case-by-case basis in my experience. I think we do get some people come through, even fresh new graduates who are, really engaged with, I want to understand what the business does. You say, can you build this feature? And they say, why? What's the point of this? What am I trying to achieve? What's what's the value in this? And they want to really get their head around it. But similarly, I do still find, young people and more experienced developers as well who, you say, hey, I want this feature. And they go, great. You want that. I trust that there's a good reason for it. I'll just get on and do it. I do prefer the people who want to understand the business because I think, there's a lot of nuances and the subtleties in exactly how something gets developed and built and decisions that need to be made along the way. And the better somebody understands the real use case that they're trying to solve, then the better a job they can do of the assumptions that they make and the questions they realize they need to ask. They do a much better job of that. So I think the people who are really successful and really going to go places, they have that real interest in what is the real purpose of this. Other people, I think, you can be a decent programmer just following instructions, but that's probably as far as you're going to go.
Did that side of things come more naturally to you then?
It took a while for me, I think. I think it took a while before I cottoned on. I enjoyed the logic puzzle of wrestling with the computer for a long time before starting to really think about solving the user's issues. And I think the first time you deliver a system where someone goes, okay, this does everything I asked for but nothing that I want, you start to realize that, okay, that's not very satisfying. I don't feel good about this. And then the next time round, you start asking more questions, you start having more conversations, you get more involved with your users. Because at the end of the day, I think we all feel satisfied when we deliver something that people value. And there's nothing, you deliver something, you might get paid, but someone puts it on a shelf, it doesn't feel good.
Yeah. Well, that's very much the case. And Yeah, I think people do misperceive that and think that, or like say, all developers just kind of want to work on things that they're all interested in. But you know, as we all know, like that just wouldn't develop the role of developer wouldn't exist, would it? If people could get away with doing that. I wanted to obviously talk about the transition into management and the difficulties that came along with that. You know, obviously on the kind of onboarding side and the continued motivation, we covered a little bit about the motivating factors, but for you personally, and I think, you know, for technically minded people in general, the transition to management is so in somewhat an inevitable road if you want to progress. I've seen some organizations that are kind of allowing teams to be built in different ways where you don't have to necessarily go into the management aspects of things. But obviously in your position, you went into that management role. What was the most challenging part of that management transition for you?
It's a completely different skill set, really, dealing with people. I think you get used to working in computers. You're basically solving problems. It's all problem solving at the end of the day. But computers do problems in very logical ways. And if you find a solution today, then that will be the solution tomorrow. People are a lot more flexible, a lot fuzzier, a lot more difficult to understand. And you find, something that you need to work on, something you want to improve, not necessarily a problem in a negative sense. But you find a solution to an issue working with people that might not work with the next person, and it might not even work with this person, when they're in a different mood or when they're in a different place in their life. So you're constantly having to relearn and reevaluate and solve the same problems over and over again. I think with software, you can have a project and you can start it, you can finish it, it gets to the point where it's done. I don't think management is ever done. People are never done. They always, even you've got a great developer, but they change, they develop, they improve, they learn, and if they never do anything bad, they might want to leave, and then you've got a whole different set of problems. So it's the constantly changing, constantly reacting, always learning. There's never that's a simple answer. I know how to do this, and then that's the end of it. I don't need to learn anymore. Obviously, on the technology side, that's, they never have to learn anymore is not true either, particularly, the rate of change in particularly the JavaScript community. There's learning constantly there, but at least if you've learned, you might have to move from Angular 1 to Angular 2, but at least you've learned Angular 1. You know how Angular 1 behaves. Angular 1 doesn't start behaving like Ember the next day for some reason. I think that's the big challenge of management. But to address your point around the progression, I think we try hard here to try have a technical progression route as long as possible for people to try not have to go into management too quickly to get promoted. I think ultimately, if you want to be the CTO, you're gonna have to manage somebody at some point. But I think we and a lot of organisations are working hard to try acknowledge that there's people who are technically really skilled, brilliant people, deserving of promotions and pay rises and looking after, who would make terrible managers. And we need to have career paths for those people so that they can be fulfilled and so that we can keep them.
It's very much the case where the most talented not in every case, of course, but it's very much the case where you do get the most talented people don't make great managers because they're just so used to and so involved in, their own worlds and what they're building that it's hardly ever transitions well into management. And, I see so many organizations that fall short at that where they think, this is the most talented person. He must logically make the best manager. That's just like saying that, Sir Alex Ferguson was also probably the best footballer of all time as well. It's rarely the case. So with that kind of in mind, you know, what characteristics are you considering now when you look at people who might be able to kind of fall into that management and succeed at it?
I think they've got to care about more than just their piece of work. So the first thing I look for is, do they care about what the rest of their team are doing? If we work in an agile, scrum-based environment with two-week sprints, if you've got someone who's a fantastic developer, but you come to a sprint review and they go, yeah, I've done my bit, the rest of the team failed and they didn't even know, yeah, that person's never gonna be able to move beyond being an individual contributor. So they need to care about, you know, the delivery of the team as a whole and helping the rest of the team to get there. They need to care, you know, to care about the well-being and the happiness and the motivation of the people around them to be an effective manager, I think. So I think that's the first two things. It's like they care about the output of the rest of the team and also the well-being of the rest of the team. I think you can, if you've got those two things, then you can build on that to learn the skills, you know, to become a manager. Obviously, there's a lot more to it, but I think those are the starting points.
Yeah, no, I would tend to agree with you on that one. I think that, you know, it's probably quite difficult as well to pin people down who are technical in this environment where technology is rapidly changing all the time. And there's always seems to be, you know, something new and shiny that comes around the corner that everyone's kind of motivated to try and work on. And especially with like retention as well, you know, talented people want to work with the best technologies, presumably, and especially the newer things. So speaking of like the retention of staff, you know, what's your experience been with, you know, attempting to kind of retain staff now? Has it become increasingly harder, especially with this kind of, you know, quote unquote millennial generation now who are, you know, motivated to work on, you know, a number of different projects, and that's seen as, you know, much more acceptable than it may or may not have been, you know, years ago?
Yeah, our retention rates tend to be pretty good. We put quite a lot of emphasis on having a good team of people to work with, because I think that, you know, really matters to good developers, that they get to work with good developers. And then on having, you know, interesting projects, and we can't chase every new shiny technology that comes along, but trying to keep an eye on every new shiny technology that comes along, then picking up the ones that are worthwhile investing in. So we, you know, keep a fairly steady, you know, learning cycle of new things coming in that people, you know, can pick up and work on and try out. And a certain amount of tolerance for failure. If we're going to take something here's the bright new shiny thing, give it a try. You've got to accept that once they're given it a try, the answer might be, yeah, this don't work. And give people credit and praise for, yeah, fine, you investigated that, you understood it, you did the work, congratulations on successfully discovering that it's no good. I think we put a lot of emphasis on work-life balance as well. I tell people I want people who will come to work, but we don't quite work 9 to 5, we work some flexible hours, but they'll come and do their hours, work hard, work smart, get stuff done, focus on delivering value, and then go home, do something else. You know, don't work 50, 60 hour weeks. If you're doing that, then, you know, things are just wrong. Because I want people who will be here for, you know, 5+ years and will keep working at that level. So, we work hard on not having people burn out if a team has to work hard to, you know, loads of extra hours to meet the sprint goals, then it's, you know, my first response is, well, look, you planned the sprint, go have a retrospective, figure out where you went wrong, plan your next sprint differently. Like, don't do that to yourselves. I don't want to hear you that you've done that to yourselves. Let's you know, do a better job of organizing things. And if that means we need to tell the business that, yeah, what you were hoping to happen isn't going to happen, then, yeah, let's go have a negotiation about that and figure out where we are. Don't just assume that you have to, yeah, kill yourselves to meet some arbitrary deadline. Occasionally, there's a business need. You know, you absolutely have to do it for some reason. But then you can talk about, right, quite how much of this is needed, exactly what's needed, what's the real deadline, and have a conversation together to figure out, right, how can we meet the requirement in the most effective way, and what can we leave till later? And I think I've been doing this, I've been doing this job for a few years now, and I think maybe three occasions I've had to say to somebody, please, will you work late, work the weekend to get something done, because we absolutely desperately need it. But the vast majority of the time, we're able to work around things and plan well enough that doesn't come up. But I think that's a big part of retaining people, that we respect their time, and we don't think we own them, and they have to do everything that's just thrown at them without complaint or feedback to us. Overall, we don't tend to lose many people here, which is really, really, really good, because it's hard to recruit people. So once we get them, we like to try to keep them.
And I love that as well, the fact that, it is a lot of planning. I think when people end up in situations where they feel forced to come in at weekends, to stay super late all the time, it's just not necessary. It frustrates me in some ways, the fact that, this being busy and staying late and all these kind of terms are glorified in many ways. And it's not, why is that glorified? It shouldn't be glorified. Like you said, it's about planning accordingly so that these things don't need to happen. Again, very rare occasions they do. But, so often you speak to people who are staying ridiculous hours all the time. And that's just down to kind of poor planning from my experiences. And it's not a cool, it's not, should be glorified. And it's so important to have interests outside of work. It's very, very important when we're kind of looking at people, it is important that they have things outside of work. It kind of keeps you sane in a lot of ways, isn't it? If everything that you do in work consumes you, it's kind of an unhealthy balance. And I would say the burnout rate is inevitable there. I'm all for kind of fighting against this kind of glorification of staying late and being super busy and all that. I think people are more productive as well when they're in a better state of mind, just in general. So, it's great to hear that you guys have kind of work towards that, or at least, from your management perspective, you do.
Yeah, I think it certainly is an aspect of the organisation. And, I work for the CTO, who's one of the founders of the company, and a lot of it's driven from his attitude to work. And, I think it does permeate certainly the parts of the organisation that I come into contact with. Yeah, I'm not sure how the sales guys work, but certainly most of us, this is very much the case of, we want people to keep producing high-quality work over the long term. We don't want people to be burning themselves out on a, kill yourself on a six-month project and then have to replace you and, go through all the recruitment and all the upskilling and the learning. Yeah, it's not good for the business. And it's, speaking as a human being, it's not a good way to treat people. So for me, it's always been a no-brainer to try treat people, treat people right and get good results from that. And thankfully it's working so far. So we managed to keep doing it.
Let's talk about a little bit about projects and kind of technologies in general that you're super interested in at the moment. Obviously technology and kind of innovation seem to be quite synonymous these days. What is it that you on a personal level, or it can be applicable to what you're doing in work, what are you kind of most interested in / sort of excited about seeing come into fruition that sort of seems to be trending or is on the verge of happening at the moment?
I think for me and the organization, we are, well, as an organization, we're migrating a product to the cloud, which we started some time ago, and it's a good way there, and we're having success selling in the cloud, but still work to go there. I think the thing that gets us excited is looking at the technologies around DevOps and containerization, so Docker being the key player there. But we're just sort of trying to look at how can we do a better job of delivering? How can we take all the boring bits, all the bits that are error prone, and turn them into just standardized jobs that just, that run themselves, all automated, and basically, just try to automate as much as possible the grunt work away, and then let people focus on, delivering value. But getting to that stage is a lot of investment, and we need to, develop new features for customers alongside that. We can't down tools until we get exactly how we want to be, and then hope the customers are still there. So getting that balance of how much to invest in our ability to deliver the work versus doing the work is the constant challenge. But that's the piece that gets us, from the technology side of things, gets us excited, is trying to work out how to do that. And the idea of being able to deploy parts of the product is Docker containers and just be able to work on it locally on your laptop, and then take the same container all the way through the test environment, through the build pipeline, and eventually into the production environment. For when you come through the industry struggling with deployment and it works on my machine and all that sort of thing, it's a tempting vision. So we're waiting to see quite how well it works out, because no doubt there's some kinks there that don't work quite as well as the marketing materials promise. But I think it seems a very exciting technology direction that's getting a lot of traction at the moment.
Yeah. And is that from a company perspective as well? Is it difficult to decide what to go in and what not to go in on at the moment? Like you're saying, because there's so much innovation happening, obviously you still have to invest in these technologies. Is that something that comes with great difficulty, is deciding what to go in on? Or is it kind of just, each technology will serve, be more of an obvious purpose for what you guys are building?
Yeah, I think it's degree of investment. So I encourage my team to just try to be aware of what's going on in the industry, aware of the buzz around there. We get everybody plural site licenses so they can do bits of training. And then we have monthly meetings where we just get together the JavaScript people, get together the Java people, get together and just bounce around ideas. All right, what's new in the industry? What's interesting? Well, let's look at technology X this month and see what we think of it, see if we like it. And then that starts to feed into, we looked at this and we think it solves this problem for us. So then, ultimately it has to be a case of, if we're going to invest significant time into it, you sort of say, right, what business problem does this solve for us? What's the return on investment for this? Is it worth it? And you have a conversation with your business stakeholders, and you've got to balance these things out and make sure we're putting enough investment into each place. And it's a constant balancing act, and nobody ever feels like there's enough time to do everything we'd like to do, either on the technology investment or on the feature development side. So it's that's the art and the science at this level of management, really.
Yeah, and again, we don't always get it right. But I think that, I think that the nice thing about some technologies is, like you say, you do have your kind of version one, but then sort of 2.0, if it's not 100%, things do improve, in almost like an agile way, don't they? So from an investment perspective, it's not kind of like massive investment. If this bit doesn't work, it's not going to kind of evolve and improve as it goes along. It's not kind of that kind of investment necessarily, is it?
Yeah, I'm a big fan of the small, cheap experiment, and try it, see what works, what doesn't work, and then iterate and improve on the best bits. You've got to balance that with, we sell to big blue chip customers, so there's only a certain amount of tolerance they've got for being experimented on. So you've got to pick how you deploy and how you try different things. But in principle, small experiments, try something, see what works, discard what doesn't, double down on what does. It seems to me to be the appropriately sensible way to move forward on these things, rather than make have a good think about it, then make one big bet and hope for the best, which I think is a good way to kill your company.
Yeah, well, I mean, I'm very familiar with kind of lean methodology, which is obviously not too dissimilar to the agile way of thinking, but obviously agile kind of is more about on the technical side of things. But I mean, agile, I think and lean have been actually around for quite a while. It's been more recent that they've kind of been the terms have been coined, you know, and thankfully so, because now more and more people are kind of bought into the agile way of, you know, well, the agile methodology. It's kind of a no-brainer now to work in that respect. But was that something that you kind of, were you one of those people that were always working that way, you just didn't know it was a thing? Or was it something that you kind of adopted after a period of time?
It's interesting. I think at the start of my career, we're working very much in a here's a big spec document, off you go, see you in 2 years sort of way. And then, you know, and then arguing over change requests and getting them costed. When I started here, we're called Smart Communications these days, but that's only been about a year. So before that, we were Thunderhead. When I started here, I was one of 7 or 8 developers reporting directly to the CTO. And everything was very much and sort of ad hoc. And it was, we didn't call it agile. We didn't have any kind of name for it, but effectively it was agile. You got given a little bit of work. You went as far as you went before you had a question or something to get feedback on. And then you went back around and had conversations. And it effectively was very agile. We then grew and found that we didn't have enough time for all the conversations and started to introduce more, you know, more agile practices explicitly to try to just try and manage the number of extra people we've got. So I think we've always had that in the DNA of the organization here. But at the same time, it's always a balancing act. You know, the business would like a 2-year roadmap of exactly what's going to be delivered when. You know, we all know that that's not realistic, but at the same time, they do need a certain amount of information to plan on, and the salesmen need to know what they're going to be selling. So there's a constant balancing act there of trying to give the, you know, the business what they need while also being realistic about, you know, the fact that we don't have perfect estimates of exactly what we're going to be delivering, well, frankly, in 2 weeks' time, let alone 2 years' time. So, I think we are, I like to think we're better than most organizations out there, to toot our own horn a little bit. Certainly from some of the bigger ones that I used to be involved with. But at the same time, there's always room to improve. And I think that's the key in any organization, is that if you commit to continuous improvement and you know, make honest attempts to be, you know, to be honest with yourselves where you are and what could be better, and keep doubling down and trying to keep improving, trying to do more things more effectively, learning all the time, then I think that's the way to be successful as an organization, you know, from whatever your starting point is. And I think that, you know, it really fits with, you know, the agile way of doing things, which is, you know, supposed to be, you know, sort of the scrum way. You know, deliver something in 2 weeks, get feedback on it, and then improve it. So yeah, and I think it's just trying to apply that same thing to every level of the business, from the individual employee up to the business as a whole. And for me, that's the heart of what Agile is about. It's feedback loops and continuous improvement. And if you're doing that, then things should go reasonably well. And then just commit to, yeah, trying to make those feedback loops as tight as possible, get the feedback faster, and then you'll improve faster. And you see this with, you know, the organizations out there that can do, you know, dozens of product releases a day and do A/B testing in automated ways and get feedback on them, you know. And then you see how fast someone like Google accelerates past other companies, because they're that learning's built into the DNA of the organization. I think we're trying to be more, you know, we don't compete with Google in any way, shape or form, and we're nothing like their scale, but that learning DNA, I think, is what's vital to be a successful organization these days.
And it's interesting as well that I think learning in development in general is kind of a requirement, you know, so it's kind of built in, so it only makes sense that kind of, if that's leading the way on the product side, that has to be a part of the program anyway. It's quite logical, really. I mean, you know, I think that, you know, if you're involved in any kind of development, you have to be willing to continuously learn, especially now.
Yeah, I say to my guys, you know, if you're the best JavaScript developer in the world right now, and you don't learn anything, then in 5 years' time you'll be average, and in 10 years' time you'll be out of a job. This industry moves so quickly. You've got to keep learning all the time. You're absolutely right.
You know, final thoughts from you when you kind of look at the perspective of the things that you've achieved. What steps were kind of the most fundamentally important? And what I mean by that is, you know, deciding to go for things or not go for things, deciding to, you know, take that leap into management, taking something. Was everything, you know, things that you've achieved in your career, were they kind of well thought out, calculated? How did you approach things? Did you kind of jump into them? What was the approach? And if you were to give anyone advice, what would you tell them from kind of a, you know, a broad perspective?
To sum it up, as I've just talked about at length, keep learning is definitely an important thing. Try to keep your ear to the ground on what's going on in the industry through podcasts, blog posts, follow people on Twitter, but try to keep up with what's going on as much as you possibly can. No one can keep on top of everything. And then be prepared when opportunities present themselves just to step up and take them. I think people who sort of go, that's not my job, that my job's to do this, that's not my job, that looks scary, that's different, I don't want to be responsible for that. Well, yeah, you're going to stay in the role you're in then. I think you need to be willing to, when something comes up and something is like, it's not sure whose job this is, take responsibility for it, figure it out, make it work, work hard at making a success of it, and then you'll be the person who, you know, now that's, you know, that's your promotion to be the person responsible for that now. And you keep doing that. And that's how I got where I am, just sort of seeing as opportunities opened up in the organization, as we grew, being willing to do things that were not just a developer's job led to more and more opportunities. And, you know, managing, you know, was willing to be the product owner when we started working with an offshore team. And then the guy who was managing the offshore team left, willing to step up and manage them. Now I'm a manager. You know, then the internal manager left, and it's like, well, do we hire someone new? Or no, I'll take that job. I can cope. And just, yeah, taking the opportunities that present themselves. And I think that would be my advice to anybody. Just be aware of what's going on in your business. See where needs are. Step up to fill them. Don't demand anything in advance, but just show yourself to be useful, and a good organization will take care of you. If you do that and your organization don't take care of you, then probably not the place you want to be anyway.
I agree. Great point to finish on, John. Thanks for taking the time to chat with us today. It's actually really insightful. Thanks for sharing with us.
Oh, thank you for asking me.
Thanks for listening to Venturi's Voice. Please make sure you subscribe at iTunes or SoundCloud, or check out the website, venturi-group.com, and keep up to date with the latest IT jobs, talent, news, and podcasts. Or drop me a line. It's andy.davis@venturi-group.com. Any feedback, topics, or guest suggestions are always welcome. And thanks again for listening to the show. See you next time.